Aye.
I would ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Moved and seconded by. And Barry.
Staff.
You got it, it's right here. Hands on fire, hands on fire.
Charlie, you're on your very, very low.
Oh, I can't.
I'll move then.
Okay. Okay, and seconded.
Yeah, maybe.
We're giving a little, and all those.
It's not here.
I asked for.
Aye.
Oh, I see that.
First item is the bus.
Enhancement program, Mr. Requa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're here today to make recommendations to the committee in regards to two different action items. One is to discuss additional Metro bus service to provide bus alternatives as part of the Rush Plus that will take place in June with the change in the Blue Line service. And secondly is just to discuss and get approval of looking at some bus enhancements that we have planned for FY13, and if there's some opportunity to advance those at the first of the fiscal year, we'd like that to be considered. Regarding the Virginia service, the Rush Plus background, in June 2012, a new service will be, adjusted service on the Blue Line will be implemented. Blue Line passengers traveling between the Pentagon and Roslyn will experience some increase in waiting time. Staff in Virginia and on our staff have been looking at providing an alternative for customers who have an interest in routing to Roslyn. We'd like to provide a service alternative to consider service alternatives for customers traveling to the Orange Line stations in DC and Virginia through Roslyn, and to continue to improve the services that we've instituted over the last year from Virginia into the district. In working with the staff, the most cost-effective alternative that we've developed, next slide, John, is an extension of our 10E service. Currently, this runs from Braddock Road to the Pentagon, and the suggestion is that it be extended to Roslyn through Crystal City by adding peak hour service in the morning and the afternoon. A total of 32 trips would be involved. We anticipate that there would be a bus ridership increase of 120,000 people over the year. 50% of those would be transferring, would essentially be rail passengers that have taken bus as the alternative. In evaluating these services, we anticipate that the annual subsidy cost would be $227,000. And the recommendation is this be a non-regional demonstration project for 18 months, and that the jurisdictions in Virginia would provide the funding. Tom Harrington is here to discuss the travel time components of this and why we were to take a look at bus service as an alternative. Tom?
Thank you. Tom Harrington, Director of Long Range Planning, and I've been project coordinator for the Blue-Yellow Realignment, or Rush Plus, as we're now calling it. Just to remind folks, when we last talked about this in October, the rail service change in June would remove every third Blue Line train. So we're talking about a rail pattern that would go from a 6-minute headway to a 12-minute headway. And thinking about the potential markets in terms of who would take a bus option to sort of basically improve their travel time, we're particularly focused on one of the markets being people who are already on the bus, and they often transfer at Pentagon to get on the Blue Line. If we can keep them on a bus, like in this proposal, that's definitely an improvement. So we have here two example trips. One is Crystal City, and the other is down on Mount Vernon Avenue, Delray, Arlandria area. And I've kind of shown them with stars on the map there. Starting with the Crystal City option, the bus option that we're talking about would be very direct from Crystal City into Roslyn, and I believe the proposal is we're talking about closed-door service once it leaves Crystal City, heading north in the morning. So in this scenario here, we kind of examples for Crystal City, you know, assuming for the rail, it's a little further walk, 10 minutes. We're assuming a shorter walk for bus in the sense that it's coming on the west side and then crossing over to the metro station. So assuming you could save a little on walk, average weight being the same, assuming, again, that most people for bus service are going to be looking at the timetable and planning their arrival based on that. So here we're showing very comparable times, 22 versus 19 minutes, depending on the walk assumption, the bus being a little cheaper, $1.50 versus $2.20 for rail. The other trip we're talking about is really the market for the current 10E, someone coming from the Mount Vernon Avenue corridor. And here, the big savings would be if someone can avoid the transfer at Pentagon, which takes time. Also, we know people don't like transfers. So even though here the bus is a little longer time, in part because it has to have to backtrack a little bit from Pentagon down to Crystal City, we're basically showing fairly comparable times, 35 versus 38 minute, plus again bus being cheaper, in fact, in this case, half the cost because you don't have to pay going from bus to rail. So again, we think these are two markets where the bus is going to be an attractive option. And the other thing I think is to put out an option now, thinking ahead to the Silver Line implementation and sort of building ridership in this corridor is definitely one of the reasons to move forward with this. Yeah, thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Tom. We bring this to you today. We are in the bus scheduling section, developing the schedules for the June service changes. And if we were going to implement this for the Rush Plus, that we would be looking for committee approval of this action today. So I'd suggest that we could answer any questions before we go on to the next subject.
Are there any questions about the presentation?
Mr. Chairman, I would just say we're really grateful for the support that we've had from staff as we've been trying to noodle our way through this. And I think it's important to put it in the context of we will be losing some connectivity this year as we do the blue to yellow shift. Mr. Requa said this, but the real hit comes when we open the Silver Line out to Wheelie and this connectivity on the headways on the train just get to be 10 to 12 minutes, which is a lot. So it's rush only, but we think rolling it out in concert with the change going over the bridge is the right way to market it and let people know that it exists. I would also say we're still talking about how the funding will be done on the Virginia side for this 18-month demonstration. So we may have to come back to you at the full board meeting. But for now, I would say please do as staff asks and move this forward so that we have it in play and the opportunity to roll it out together with the change in rail is available.
Out of just ignorance, what happens at the end of the 18-month period? What do you propose to bring back to the board at the end of this 18-month non-regional local jurisdiction support for this?
At the end of 18 months, we generally provide a report as to how well the service has done, but does it meet criteria, and either recommend it for termination or recommend it for to adopt it as a regional bus service.
Okay. Kathy, did you?
In both this recommendation and the other one you're going to talk about, right. This is using funds that would be in the FY13 budget that has not yet been passed. Is that correct?
No, the second item addresses that. This is an additional service that is not included in the current FY13 plan. This was something that has developed since the 13 budget was initiated in the late summer and fall. This service was suggested after that point. So this is $227,000 of additional funds that are not included in the current budget proposal.
But it would be as
it would have
part
to be
of the
added.
It would yes. just be as part
right.
of the 2013. I guess I have a couple of concerns here, and I understand Ms. Hines has talked to me about the timing issues, but maybe there's a way to allay these concerns. The first major concern is I have a concern about taking things out of the normal budget.
Right.
Process and normal budget schedule. You can get to a situation where you're approving things on a project by project basis, and then when you get to the budget, you discover you've already spent a big chunk of your money before you even consider the rest of the budget. I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned about I'm understanding from some of our staff that they have not yet gotten a lot of details about what these two projects would involve. Now, the Virginia one obviously doesn't concern Maryland, but the other one, they haven't gotten a lot of details about what it would involve. And, you know, certainly that makes me a bit nervous if they haven't had a chance to really look at the details of it.
Well, maybe I should address the second item, because it kind of relates to the first in a sense from a timing standpoint. Throughout the year, our staff works with other staff to try to develop what are the most alternatives that we can develop, try to cost those alternatives to assist in improving bus service. We're looking at trying to improve on-time performance. We're looking at trying to improve overcrowding and trying to meet some of the requests that we hear at public hearings and other meetings with the public and trying to provide additional service. Priority corridor networks carry over 50% of all of our passengers, and we prioritize and we look at these services and have developed in the general manager's budget some recommendations for gradual service adjustments throughout the year. Since we were coming back with a change in service based on discussions with Virginia, we wanted to put forth and share with the board some of the service recommendations that we are proposing in the FY13 initiatives. If we wait for the normal board proposal, which we certainly can in June, a June approval, we wouldn't be able to make any of the service adjustments until starting in December. This is an opportunity if the board and the committee wanted to make these adjustments that are included in the appendix, we could actually start these in June 17th along with the Rush Plus, but we would need tentative approval to put that into the scheduling process at this time. We think that these are services that will make improvements in on-time performance, increase ridership, reduce overcrowding, respond to some of the customer concerns. We think we have discussed these with staff. Maybe all of the final details have not been there, and I realize that it is somewhat of an advance approval of part of the initiative 413 in advance.
Could I just add to that? And I want to do this. And the reason for it is, you know, we've talked about the budget and improving bus service. We haven't been very specific about it. This gives very detailed specifics as to what we're intending to provide as part of that enhanced priority card service. And also, you know, we continually hear from customers, well, we're raising fares, what are we getting for it? Well, this not only gets you something for it, but taking, in my view, a very small business risk, and you're actually in a better position to determine that than I am financially, you can actually start delivering improved service on July 1st when you adopt the budget rather than waiting until December to begin introducing it. So I thought it was an opportunity for us to be responsive, provide the service faster at a relatively modest financial risk. But again, you know, you with jurisdictions are a better position to determine how much of a risk that is.
Would it be possible, I understand the concern about the blue-yellow line service, blue-orange line service. I understand that issue. Is it possible to do that without doing the others?
Absolutely. Just to clarify, there are three segments of service improvements that we see in FY13, and the action that we really would like approval on is to move with the first half, which is valued at about $2.27 million out of the, we're not asking for approval of the entire annual program because the June approval of the remainder would not be implemented until starting in December anyway.
I think it's important to separate the request. I think hindsight being 2020, we probably could have judged that the new split on the blue-yellow would ultimately suggest some bus rerouting because of the change in the level of service in these the corridors that are being suggested here. And it makes sense from the customer standpoint to have those changes and additional services in place for that new rail service configuration. And that's what I think that's the strongest rationale. Plus, it's a Virginia jurisdiction cost, and Virginia is highly interested in seeing these changes made. I think that puts that in a different kind of category. And then I think that's easier, because it's easier to deal with that. I think I've had some concerns back about the rest of the changes early in advance of the budget process. And I think it's worth having a broader, you have a good presentation on this piece of it, to hear the rationale about the rest of the changes and the rationale not only for the changes but the timing of them.
I mean, we could speak to, it's a timing issue primarily. I mean, we could speak to, Mr. Hamry is here, could speak to some of the details of the service. I mean, again, in most cases for June and September, these are priority corridor adjustments. We're talking about major lines, 37, 39, S9, services that are carrying, routes that are carrying thousands of people on a given day. I mean, we could go into some of the details now if you like.
Think it's fair to say that this is kind of a new process for the board, mm-hmm, about having some major bus changes being requested as approval before the budget, the coming fiscal year's budget is approved. And I don't believe there's a question about the efficacy of the proposed changes. There is some jurisdiction question raised about separating it from the formal budget adoption process and the adequacy of the conversation between the jurisdiction staffs and the Metro staff about these proposed changes. Madam Chair?
I just want to go follow up on your part of it, because if I understand, what we are offering is actually some of what we did earlier in the year, that we made some adjustments that we thought were appropriate adjustments. They provided a better service to the customer, and they were efficient and within a scope of funding there. And the only difference now is we're looking forward into the next budget, following that same protocol, but we're looking forward into the next budget to actually fund it.
The adjustments that we made last year, we came to the board in July, made some recommendations, did some public hearings because it caused some route eliminations or service eliminations. The board approved that in November. All of those changes are not in place yet because we haven't been able to get them scheduled
so
we still have some to come. If we go through the normal budget process, which is the norm, then approval in June would create service adjustments beginning in December. And this is just suggestion that this is an opportunity to respond, as the general manager said, to some of the concerns that we heard. This is an opportunity to try to advance that service adjustments in the scheduling process.
And so let me just complete it. And so an action today would be required, and at the next board then, to put this in place?
I think our thought is if the committee was going to recommend this, that we would put these actions, we would gamble and put these into the scheduling process, and hopefully that this would be confirmed in March at the board meeting for the first half of the year's service adjustments, not considering the second half.
Let me just agree with the chair's recommendation about splitting the consideration of these two things. I think in terms of the Virginia service, I think there's a very good argument for doing it at the same time the changes are made. And let me say, in terms of the other service, I don't have any objection to the service, and my anticipation is that my jurisdiction wouldn't have. The concern is sort of getting ahead of ourselves in terms of the budget. And I'm also worried about, having not been around that long, I don't know if this is a common activity, but it's something that I would be very concerned about expending money out of a budget we haven't considered yet. That's the crux of my concern. Taking an action on a budget that we haven't fully considered yet is where I'm coming from and my concern is.
Thanks, Mr. Downs. I guess I'm in a slightly different place. This is one half of 1% of the budget gap that we're dealing with, if my math is right, $2 million out of $110 million. These are things, if you look at the annual ridership increases on these lines, this is an awful lot of people who would be experiencing improved service beginning in June, which is when their fares are going to go up. These are lines that are very busy, that have on-time performance issues, and we're talking about, from my point of view, a tiny amount of money in this enormous budget. Now, if I didn't think that we weren't going to have a way to close the budget, I might feel differently. And if I didn't believe that how we're going to keep moving people in this region is by doing these sorts of things, I might feel differently. But I can't imagine us not agreeing ultimately to doing this, and to delay it until after the first of the year, to me, just doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of the timing. I am sensitive to what my staff is saying and what other staffs are saying, which is they haven't had a chance to fully see this and understand it, and that should be a concern to you, that you thought you had and they're feeling they didn't. But what I'm wondering is whether there is a way to make sure that that conversation happens in a timely manner. And even if we have to reconvene this committee prior to the board meeting in 2 weeks, in order to have, for all of us, a more informed conversation. To me, there's a lot of customer reasons to think about this, and I totally understand the financial concerns, but gosh, this is a tiny amount of money in the size of what we're dealing with.
We don't think of this as a budget problem. I think of it as a process integrity and a process creation. In effect, I think we're suggesting the creation of a different way of potentially dealing with bus changes and system adds that may be a lead for the budget. I think of this as potentially creating a new part of the annual budget cycle. I would hope that we are cautious about how we do that in terms of all of the jurisdictions feeling comfortable with this process and their understanding of it and their support of it. You're right, the amount of money in the relative scheme of things for the authority is small, and in particular at a time when our customers are saying they don't see the bang for the buck and you're charging us for fare increases for declining services, et cetera. I think we do have an obligation to meet that criticism from our writers. But I also think that we have to take the additional steps that are necessary to raise the comfort level of the jurisdiction staff about process, information sharing, objectives, outcomes, cost implications, et cetera, here. And I don't think that we have it at this instant.
Chairman,
for a variety of reasons.
I realize I'm not a member of this committee, so this is a gratuitous comment, but I want to associate myself with Ms. Hines' comments. I think the customer satisfaction component of this is such that we can find a way to deal with the process and get the staff briefed. If you have to have an additional meeting, let's go ahead and do that. But to me, this is something that I think we need to move on, and I certainly support your approach on that. So.
Yeah, I would also agree with Ms. Hines' comments. I think the issue here, and I think you're correct, this is actually introducing a new type of process to the agency. And I think with respect, and I also think these are good business practices that we have to undertake in terms of constantly improving our service to reflect the demands that are out there and to improve customer satisfaction. I think in some cases these might be dealt with in terms of bus service standards and looking at those. And I think, and recalling my days at Chicago, all these things were delegated to the staff once we had agreed to a policy, once the board had set aside a budget for these fine-tuning of service, and that's essentially you set up a part of the budget, you agree to the standards. Many of these things, including increasing trips or whatever, are based on that. So I think you are correct, but I think at the end of the day, this is really, at the end of the day, I think we are obligated to provide a higher level of service where warranted to our customers, and I think this is essentially a good thing to do at the end of the day. So I understand the issue with the cart before the horse, but I also think at the end of the day, we are obligated to pursue this in the most expedient manner possible once we clear it with our jurisdictional staff.
Is there any way that this could be funded out of current year's budget?
Yeah, I think we've tried to put squeeze on the budget right now.
Because there's there were.
I say whether my financial office.
Because there's.
The answer is yes.
Because there's two concerns that I have. One is the, you know, jumping the queue on the budget, and if we can somehow fund it under something like Mr. Acosta suggested, a sort of a money that could be applied for general bus service improvements. The other thing is if there is something that can be done within the next few weeks to get all of our staffs up to speed. I'm hearing the same thing. I think other jurisdictions are hearing the same thing about their staffs not being totally comfortable with what is included and what the details are. I think they've gotten the general sense, but what I'm hearing is they're not. They feel unprepared to think about the details.
Well, I would be happy to volunteer Mr. Hamry and his staff to over the next couple of weeks to meet with any staff at any time. I think you know, we can go further into the details, and I think we're confident that these are the core services of the system, and that hopefully there would be acceptances to the changes that we're looking trying to make.
If it can be done out of this year's budget, and if the staff can get up to a certain comfort level, then I would be in favor of it for customer service reasons, yes.
Could I also suggest that apparently we've gone years without a predictable bus revision process about adjustments of routes, eliminations, additions. We're last year at mid-year, we went through a hearing process about service reductions, eliminations, additions, et cetera, to better manage incremental changes in the bus process. This is the other end of that. This is adding cost service in advance of the budget. they're both part of an annual cycle. I would hope that there is a thought-out process that is understandable that could be worked through with the jurisdiction staffs about what that annual cycle looks like, what's subject to this kind of discussion pre-final budget so that there can be a mesh, and then the 6 months later, the discussions around how we make service reductions, eliminations, adds, et cetera, that are cost neutral. That's at least what you tried to do last year.
Last year.
So there are two pieces of this. One's budget and one's non-budget. Think through an annual cycle that helps us, helps the jurisdictions understand what's going on and make it predictable. I hate it that we went years without making any significant adjustments in bus service because, in effect, the board just didn't have the patience to deal with stuff like that. We do, as a board, have the patience to deal with this, but you can help us by thinking through what this annual cycle for bus looks like.
If I can.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. Last year, there was a mid-year cycle. It was a zero-sum game with the attempt to balance. 2 years ago, there were a batch of service changes included in the budget. Unfortunately, they were all perceived as service cuts and were simply taken off the table, so that the revisions and the balancing went out the table with everything else. So if we can have a predictable cycle that says we do want to make changes, we don't want to continue to run buses that nobody rides, we want to put them out where people are, we really need to know what's the open season, when can we make those proposals, and what will be the process for considering them. And I, you know, certainly if there's zero sum, I'll be very
Well, if I can, I would suggest that there aren't going to be a lot of zero-sum gains. I think, as you say, for over the years, what happens is the service increases are planned out, the cost is put to it, it's in the budget process, and it doesn't get passed. To get it approved in the budget, say for a June approval, you will want some justification for what we want to do to justify the additional expense, and that's what we're trying to provide. But we're happy to work with staff, trying to find a cycle that matches both, because, you know, in all honesty, service adjustments are going to cost money. But right. No, we will do that, absolutely.
And have everybody understand when that falls in the annual cycle and what the rules of engagement are with the jurisdictions about this. We're entering a new era. I applaud you for pushing this. I think we just need to make sure that the jurisdiction staffs are along with us all in this process as we go.
We'll try to bring them along.
So if I could just respond again. I don't think we should rule out the thought that there are buses out there that no longer serve a purpose. I always go back to my New York experience where 20 years after the Brooklyn Navy Yard had closed, 30 years after Ebbets Field had closed, we were still running a bus between the Navy Yard and Ebbets Field. Just have to keep looking at these things.
I would suggest a meeting of within the next week or so of the JCC on a call basis to look at this, to have a set of recommendations that the JCC would make back to the board about what they think is a realistic approach and timing, any specific concerns they have about adds or subtracts on your list, and we can have a committee meeting in time to have a recommendation for the board meeting. Is that?
We'll call the meeting probably next week and talk through everything with the JCC, try to put together some definitive recommendations and get the support and bring that back.
And I'm not suggesting that you do that with the blue-yellow changes. I think there is an agreement that the committee would make a recommendation to the board for the approval of that service. On at this meeting.
Can we, Mr. Chairman, if I'm understanding, I think our discussion indicates that we're ready to move forward. We just need to have a jurisdictional staffs meet, and that way, before the board meeting, we will have a recommendation of approval if the recommendation is to accept action for today.
Well, are you suggesting a conditional approval?
You can call it conditional if you'd like.
Okay.
Subject to a meeting with the jurisdictional staff on the second half of this. We already understand the first half is okay. So subject to a meeting that we move approval of it, subject to a meeting with JCC.
Well, could I ask for a motion to approve the additional service for the blue-yellow line supplementation, I think, is the right word.
Mr. Chairman, you need somebody on the committee to make that motion, right? So let me make the motion that we approve the supplemental service, recommend that to the Board of Directors that the supplemental service on the in Virginia for the blue-yellow line be considered, and that subject to the meeting of the JCC, the other changes put forward by staff be moved forward as well.
Motion made and seconded. Is there any further discussion of this item? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay. I think that concludes that item.
Mr. Chairman.
Next item.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I unfortunately am going to have to leave at 3:45, which will, I guess Kathy will and Jim will still be here, so somebody can substitute in for me. I have a speaking engagement. So just, guess we're going to have to hold till 5:00 on these days. My request to the schedulers is we got to rotate who the last committee is, so it's not the same people who have to stay late every time.
Next, we have a presentation on the key performance indicators.
Thank you. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer. The purpose of the presentation today is to summarize the most recent quarterly results for our key performance indicators as compared to the same quarter last year, to talk about highlights being taken, and also we're going to talk about a new target for bus fleet reliability, which is the mean distance between failures. And I just wanted to note really quickly that although this was released publicly, this vital signs report almost a month ago, we're only just presenting it. So the data, for example, that was presented on crime is a little newer than this. We had a little bit of a crossover due to the committee timing. Next slide, please. Under our goal of creating a safer organization, we have the measures of customer injury rate, employee injury rate, and crime rate. And those are on pages 48, 49, and 50 of the vital signs in your package. In terms of customer injury rates, our injuries declined compared to last year and remained better than the target. The rate's 39% better than the same quarter of the prior year, and that's primarily due to reduction in bus customer injuries. But we also saw reductions in every category, bus, rail, and access, as compared to last year. When we looked at this more closely, if we look at the same quarter in 2010, there were actually 6 bus accidents resulting in 75 customer injuries. Injuries of that magnitude have been avoided this year, and thus the rate has gone down. We've had a great deal of focus on our local safety committees on bus and train operator situational awareness, and it seems to be paying off. Employee injury rates were better than target as a result of aggressively resolving safety hotline calls and providing training and guidance. As we looked at the month of September, unlike September of the prior year, large occurrences of straining injuries were avoided. Those are our biggest category of employee injuries. And we looked at the safety department had conducted various formal and impromptu campaigns emphasizing proper lifting techniques, and that seems to have paid off. I won't talk about crimes because you already heard about that in great detail earlier today. The next slide, Deliver Quality Service has a number of measures, and this page looks at our on-time performance for bus, rail, and metro access. Bus on-time performance over the fourth quarter, performance continually improved from October to November and then December due to fewer buses running late. However, it was offset by buses running early in each month of the quarter. We've implemented some initiatives to improve performance, and those include changing some of our routes to run every 15 minutes during the peak periods to deliver more predictable service. And we've also released 14 manager trainees into the field to provide increased street oversight. We already have the data for January, and you'll be seeing that shortly, but the numbers are up again. If we look at the same time last year, our performance is about the same, so it is definitely seasonal, the bus on-time performance. Looking at rail on-time performance, it improved about 1% compared to the same period the prior year, meeting the target. However, we continue to face the challenges of our track work that you heard a lot about today, a number of new operators becoming familiar with the schedules, and some of the seasonal delays from November with leaves and an occasional deer on the track bed. Metro access on-time performance remains steadily above target, as due to the continued vigilance in managing the call center. And that's even though ridership continued to trend downward, and the same period was 14% below last year. Next slide. Continuing with the goal of delivering quality service, looking at our fleet reliability and our vertical transportation availability measures. Bus fleet reliability, the mean distance between failure is the measure. When we compared it to the same quarter last year, it did decline due to problems with engines that we've been reporting, a higher number of shutoffs due to cooling system issues, and wear and tear of suspension components in our older diesel buses. If you take a step back and look at the bigger picture, however, on a full year-over-year basis, our buses were 7% better in calendar year 11 than they were in 2010, and have averaged 3% improvements each year over the past 5 years since 2007. We have a number of different campaigns underway and are progressing well to resolve these engine problems, electrical issues, and other things. I think at last report, about 75% of the engine campaign was complete and has probably even progressed since that time. Rail fleet reliability, the mean distance between delays is the measure, and it has declined compared to last year. The delays due to doors have been worsening over the past year due to problems with the door mechanisms and controls on the 2000, 3000, and 6000 series rail cars. They all share the same electronic and mechanical door subsystems. The engineering department in rail cars has teamed with the maintenance department to identify some short-term and long-term solutions. The short-term solutions is a campaign to install relay components on all those three series, and that should be completed by summer, which should result in some reduction in door failures. Then there's a much longer term, about 18-month solution, which involves re-baselining some of the door systems and adjusting software tolerances and so on. The good news is that with the impact of each door delay, it only takes us approximately, there's only a delay of approximately 5 minutes to the riding public on average, so we respond quickly when it happens. We just are having a lot of door problems. We've seen a market improvement in the 1000 series in a very short term. If you look at quarter over quarter, we saw a 46% improvement from the prior quarter due to our ongoing improvements on the brake system. Escalator availability improved as a focus on quality maintenance demonstrated results. We've been talking about that for about a year. Some of the more complex repairs have been addressed, so overall repairs are now less time intensive. Elevators performance decreased due to a unit out of service for modernization and repairs to a damaged elevator. Next slide. Just talking about setting targets, wanted to let you know that we look at our targets every year, and the executive leadership team and general manager met over a couple of days to talk about setting targets. And we looked at a number of elements to decide what the targets would be or to propose what the targets would be, such as data trends over the last couple of years, different actions we're taking to improve performance, the resources we have available or constraints we might have, and what type of targets we might want to set, percentages or numbers, and the different time frames. So we're still working with the general manager to finalize those targets. But there is one that I'd like to share with you today, the bus fleet reliability target. The next slide, please, which is reflected in the vital signs report. And this is kind of an example of excellent target setting. So our old target as of last calendar year was 7,400 miles between failures. And we have revised that to 7,700 miles between failures for buses. That included quite a detailed analysis, including 17 months of data, and considered things such as our projected 100 bus rehabilitation schedule. You saw a lot about that earlier today. The recent acquisition of new buses and the plan to add 200 more this year, the projected number of miles we're going to be driving, historical seasonal impacts, and the fleet composition. So all those things taken into account, we are revising the target to a more aggressive one of 7,700. And in summary, continue to use performance information to guide decision making, and we'll be back with you in the next quarter to update you on our results. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any questions.
Any questions about the KPIs and the quarterly review? Mr. Bolger?
I wanted to ask why Metro Bus on-time performance is sort of stuck at 74%. Is that because we have the second worst congestion in the world, or the United States, or is that because of some other reason? I mean, Jack and I have talked about this before, and I don't. I still think it's surface arterial congestion that we have no control over. Is that something that?
Well, I think we're number one in congestion in the country. Well, we're always in the top three.
Yeah, we're
something
we don't. It's a wonderful thing.
You know, there's a lack of dedicated lanes. There's a lack of bus lanes, HOV lanes for high occupancy vehicles in the main area. Again, as we just discussed about service changes, it gets caught up in the budget process, and the adjustments don't get made. Ridership increases or decreases. Changes need to be made. We call it state of good repair. From an operational standpoint, things change, construction changes, development happens, and we try to keep the statistics and we try to provide the updates we can, but it's difficult to make changes that cost money because there's not a pot to use. And I think the discussions we've just had, I think, will go a ways. And I mean, we anticipate a 10 to 15 to 20% increase in on-time performance on the routes that we're able to adjust, and most adjustments do require some funding for that. But we will come back with the opportunities next year to maybe take a look at services that are not performing well. Hopefully we can save some money in those areas to help make some of these adjustments and make the budget process a little bit less costly.
Do we have preemptive signal on the buses?
Very few.
Very few? Is that like 1%, 20%?
Georgia Avenue, there is some. The Tiger Grant will provide some on the Route 7 corridor in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Hopefully there will be some others that will provide us some assistance.
Well, I just think, Mr. Chairman, that it would be a great initiative to get into to see if we could make that a project somehow, some way, to get these numbers up.
Right.
And as for virtually... not a lot of money, but I'll keep on bringing it up because we don't seem to have a project for this. So
it's really working with the jurisdictions.
I've been working with the jurisdictions on traffic control for 30 years, and I'm telling you right now, it's no further along than it was in the 80s. So.
Well.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Like Abbott's Field.
Are you not going there?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
That concludes the KPIs. Rail service criteria.
All right. I'm back again, and we have a joint presentation this time on rail service criteria. I'll kick it off, and then I'll turn it over to Tom Harrington, and Mr. Kubitschek will also talk about some results. So the purpose of our presentation today is to talk about the benefits of board-approved rail service criteria. Service criteria have a long history of being used at WMATA, although it's not formal, i.e. board approved, and we're going to talk about the benefits of doing that. When we last communicated with the board in the fall about this topic, we laid out some steps and a schedule, and one of those was to conduct a peer review. So we'll be talking about what we found with the different transit agencies that we contacted. Tom Harrington will show how rail service criteria is currently being used by Metro informally today to plan future service, monitor delivered service, and make service adjustments. And then Mr. Kubitschek will conclude with some remarks about the impacts that service changes have had over the years on our operation. Next slide, please. Metro has, as I mentioned, informal rail service criteria, so why move towards board approval? The topic has been discussed with the board on a number of occasions in the past, but didn't result in specific board-endorsed criteria. Just kind of talking about Metro Rail as a regional system by design, the hub and spoke network with interline rail lines increases the options for customers traveling through the system. Each line spans a region, connects terminuses and termini in Maryland and Virginia, and merges with other lines. It provides maximum capacity and convenience, but it also means that a delay in a single line can generate ripple effects. As a result, we evaluate the rail service at a system level and not at a line level, similar to how we do bus. Having board-endorsed criteria promotes a data-driven process to evaluate service that's a transparent process. It also reinforces the board's role as a policymaking entity, and as noted, the governance committee brought forward and the board adopted bylaws in July 2011, and one bylaw speaks directly to this topic. Next slide. Focus groups that were conducted by our customer research group show that people want frequent service and safe platforms. The Riders Advisory Council gave us good input as well, adding that predictability is key and that overcrowding should be avoided. One of the interesting things is customer feedback about rush hours and special events is pretty different from how Metro tends to evaluate these days. So after we accomplish something like an inauguration or 4th of July or cherry blossom, we feel like we do a really good job, but for some of our customers on the crowded platforms, they find those experiences especially challenging because of the crowd, so it's an important message for us to act on. We also met with the JCC 2 weeks ago, and they gave us some feedback on how criteria has been used in the past, for example, to allocate rail cars, how we might, as we go forward, to establish a criteria distinguish between peak and off-peak, as well as some other input. Okay, moving to the peer agency review, we contacted 12 different rail agencies, and three of them did not respond, so showing nine here. So along the left column, you can see the different transit agencies. Along the top, you can see the criteria. And headway, as you know, means time between trains. Span of service is the hours of operation. Passengers per car indicates how crowded cars are at peak stations. Service delivery represents things like schedule adherence or headway adherence. Those are measured differently, pretty differently at different agencies. And the little boxes show when there's a checkbox that those have formal adopted rail service criteria. So you can see that LA Metro, Boston, and Chicago all have taken steps in this area. When there's an open box, it means they use it in service planning but not formally adopted. So you can see we have a couple of those boxes. And then R means that we report it kind of after the fact, but we don't really use it in service planning. So I think one of the common themes is that there's no set of criteria that's used industry-wide. There's a lot of variation. But there is one commonality that headways and passengers per car are some of the most common criteria used in service planning. Service delivery is commonly monitored and reported, such as we do through the vital signs report that you just heard, but not used as service criteria in different agencies. Okay. Some examples.
Correct. Mr. Janko.
Can we go back to the chart before that? You made a statement that there doesn't seem to be consistent use of certain criteria, but I see some consistency with certainly some of the large systems with regard to headways and frequency and then passengers per car. So, I mean, I'm just interpreting it a little differently than maybe you are. And then, of course, span of service is in four categories as well for four systems. So why would you make that statement?
Well, I think maybe I should have focused more on that the most consistency we saw was between the use of headways and passengers per car, but nothing besides those two, nothing else stuck out as much. I maybe said it too strongly.
Yeah, I just seem to think that those three categories with the four checks seem to stick out in my mind. So maybe we need to kind of look at those.
Okay. Going back to the successful examples of formal, and not formal, but not the way we use it, but formally adopted service criteria applications. In New York, MTA, they, based upon their service criteria, added one rush hour trip on one of their lines because the passengers per car was above the threshold for a half-hour period. Chicago reallocated eight cars from the pink line to the brown line to balance passengers per car just in November of last year. LA Metro is planning to, this is a look-ahead one, in calendar year 2013, due to crowding at Union Station, to add cars to the eastbound AM peak trains. And then WMATA, we have formal service criteria for bus, so that's why we use a bus example here, kind of in the middle of these rail examples. The regional mobility panel was convened in 1999 with a number of different business, government, labor, and citizen leaders to address the financial and service implications resulting from the fragmentation of the regional bus systems. And as a result of that, some of the service criteria was established that determines what's regional and non-regional bus service. So now I'm going to turn it over to Tom, and he's going to talk about how we use rail service criteria today in our planning.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to talk today about three service criteria that affect the quality of service for customers, and in particular, three that Metro has some control over. In terms of the design of the system, there are constraints on the type of service we can provide. Certainly, where we interline, station spacing, the operating speed of the system, the train control system all dictate, to some extent, the quality of service we can provide. But we're going to talk about three criteria, how they're used in planning, how we basically monitor the service delivery, and then how they can be used in service adjustments. So the first one is frequency or headway as it's measured, headway being the time between trains. Here we're showing typical, basically, service that's provided during regular service. And so one sort of design feature of the system is the fact that in the peak, we start at six-minute headways at the ends of lines, and then in the core of the system where we have interlining, we provide three-minute headways in the system. Midday in the core, again, it goes up to 6 minutes or 12 minutes on the end. In off-peak, we go as high as 20-minute headways. So for planning, the headway, you know, dictates the amount of service we're providing. The key measure on monitoring, we just heard it in terms of KPIs, is on-time performance. And for rail, that means headway adherence. And then for service adjustments, again, we're looking at sort of what customers expect. I think a key issue we're referring to here is the fact that today, with so much work on the capital program, in some cases we can't provide this regular level of service because of track work. Next slide. Second key thing, in addition to the frequency, is how long the service is provided during the day, the span of service. The definition being the hours in which service is available. Here we're showing the standard hours for the system. Again, rail is a true system, so we have an opening and closing for the system, although it is kind of a rolling opening and closing at the very ends, the beginning of the service and the end of the service. For planning, really the key thing is how the service hours coordinate with bus service. We report service hours span, but beyond that, I think where this has maybe gotten used in the past is thinking about at the bottom there, special events, in particular early openings for events and sort of late closings, and evaluating basically that kind of service change. Really the key measure in terms of the quality of service that's tracked more regularly is passenger crowding or passengers per car. Here we're defining this as the number of passengers that pass through a rail segment in the peak hour, basically divided by the total number of rail cars in that peak hour. That's the person per car measure. The thresholds that we've used historically are really in the 100 to 120 range, the significance being 120 is what we consider acceptable service levels for the peak hour. 100 significance is that's been used in the past as sort of a target when we've had rail cars we're allocating, and also for planning, such as when we're doing a rail fleet plan, that sort of thing, 100 per car being our target for the amount of sort of fleet that we need to provide good service. And in terms of how we use it for planning, the key thing is we can control the length of trains, 6 and 8 car trains, and then also tripper trains being added service that goes out there to address crowding that's more frequent than capacity. So again, these are sort of three of the key measures. In terms of monitoring, passage per car is done manually with actual counts. One thing, as we talk about the future of sort of how we monitor service quality, is sort of more automated ways that we can estimate rail loads maybe more frequently than just in the peak hour, and that would be maybe a future discussion about how we use criteria going forward.
Hey, this is just a kind of a historical snapshot of kind of what's happened here at this agency, you know, beforehand, and also why this effort is, why it's really so important, because it's one of the things that's not, that should come across is it's about the convenience of our customers, but it's also getting feedback from our staff. Because one of the things we've also seen in the feedback I've gotten here is that the staff, a lot of times when some of these plans are being deployed or whatever, not working off of numbers, and they're the ones that are really seeing it just because somebody wants to do something, they can tell you that it's just not going to work. And basically, then there's a residual effect. There's a lot of negative press. There's a lot of negative impact and stuff and resentment. So it's just a bad experience across the board. And the one that I can speak to personally, just walking into, was in 2007, and there was a big push, you know, to reduce the budget and go through it and run four car trains. And it lasted, you know, it probably, the build up to this process because of the budget and everything else, it took probably 6 to 8 weeks to build up to this effort. And it probably lasted all of 1 week. I mean, the minute that it, the service was tried in this manner or whatever, the phones are just ringing and everything else. And then you get a lot of this stuff of, I told you so and everything else. And so that's why this is also very important for us moving forward, is to get this thing, you know, established. Because the other thing, our margin for error will continue to narrow as this system becomes more and more saturated with more and more riders, especially whenever we add the addition of the Silver Line and everything else from a logistic perspective. And the next slide is an outline.
The only two really disastrous changes in service were board imposed. Both the two-car train for late-night service and four-car train for off-peak were board mandated. The absence of service criteria allows that to happen. If we don't have a publicly ventilated, publicly accepted set of service criteria for rail service, and everything is fair game, and I think it speaks volumes to why we're going through this process about rail service criteria, so we don't make stupid mistakes like that again.
Thank you. It was definitely not comfortable.
Okay, so as we promised, we came back today to talk about the peer review, and we will continue down the path on the steps that we identified up front, coming back in the summer to present the proposed rail service criteria to the board for adoption in the fall, which would establish the guidelines for application of the criteria.
So that would be July? It can't be August.
You could come in August.
I could come in August, yes.
Try.
It's either going to be July or September.
Or September, yes.
Okay.
Commit to that, either or. Thank you.
Mr. Bolger? I just want to make a comment. I ride the rails a lot, and the train operators, just a thought, have really done, I think, a better job of enunciating to the passengers how to overcome overcrowding. I don't know, Rich, that if you could pass the word that the board, at least one board member, recognized that, particularly in the core. And I think people are listening, or at least I hope they are.
I'll put in my employee message tomorrow.
Yeah. Thank you.
That concludes the discussion on rail service criteria. I would ask for a deferral of the issue on sustainability until next month. Given the lateness of the hour, the diminishing number of board members, and a media focused on a whole bunch of other issues. So with the board's agreement, I would delay the presentation on sustainability and would adjourn the committee meeting. So committee's adjourned. Board's adjourned.